the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to another edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. You know, when you're planning for retirement, next to the equity in your home, pension assets, whether it's your IRAs or your 401ks or all of the other plans that are out there, represent the largest assets you own. I mean, 401ks, for example, are $5.3 trillion invested in them currently, representing 19% of the $28 trillion in retirement assets all told. So the assets which you have accumulated in your pension plan play a major role in your retirement. And next to Social Security, it's going to be the major source of income during your retirement years. So protecting those assets has never been this important. And what you have to recognize, this is nothing new if you've been listening to the show for a while, is that we are in the middle of a Fed rate raising cycle. And 95% of the time when they do this, it leads to a recession and to a bear market, and led to major declines in stocks somewhere between 50 and 60%. So today's topic is sequence risk in the risk zone. And two things I think we need to define ahead of time, Jim, is number one, what do you mean by sequence risk? And then what is the risk zone?
You know, various people describe it differently, but basically the risk zone begins at age 50 to 55, depending on when you're going to retire. It's usually the last 10 to 15 years prior to your retirement date. And why they call that the risk zone is this is the last 10, 15 years. It's that time when most individuals are putting away the greatest amount of savings for the retirement, usually around 50, 55. The kids have grown up. You put them through college. They've gone off and got married. And you're finally, it's you and the missus, and you're salting away as much money as you can because it dawns on you, hey, 10, 15 years, I'm going to be retiring. So from age 50 to 65, you really need to be shifting to safer investments, things like cash, fixed income, treasury inflation protected securities, short-term treasury notes, and those kind of safe investments should increasingly occupy a larger percentage of your portfolio because, you know, nobody is going to ring the bell when the market hits a top, and we won't know that we're in a recession till well after we're in one. So these portfolio percentages should be increasing each year the closer you get to your retirement.
So let's take a theoretical then. Say I'm somewhere between 60 and 65. What should that theoretical be?
I mean, the last couple of years before you retire, you should be de-risking and only have 20% exposed to risk, because the last thing you want to do is start out your retirement. Now, let's just, you know, I've used this example, but I think it illustrates the point we're going to try to make here. Imagine that you're retiring January 1st, 2008. You've saved all your life. You've got this big pile of money, and your retirement calculations are based on that pile of money and drawing X percent off of it. If you were heavily invested in stocks, let's say you were 70, 80, or even 60, 40, in the next 18 months, the stock market would lose 58% of its value. So the last thing you want to do is start out your retirement and see a loss of your assets of 30 to 40%. Because I can tell you this, it's going to change your entire retirement, because it'll take you almost, if you lose 40%, you're going to need to make almost 100% just to break even. I mean, think of this. If you were in stocks, heavily invested in stocks in 2000, you lost 50% by 2002. It would take another 5 years to break even again in 2007. So by September of 2007, the market had reached where it was in March of 2000. Only problem is in the next 18 months, the stock market lost 58%. So then it would take till March and April of 2013 before you were break even again. So imagine if you retired in the year 2000 and you had gone through this. You went nowhere for 13 years. Meanwhile, you're drawing down your assets. So this is why you don't want to do this, because you basically want to de-risk your portfolio when you get into the retirement zone. If you're age 50, you gradually begin to shift over to safer, more conservative assets instead of, you know, maybe something like a large cap fund, treasury bonds, and you increase that percentage the closer you get to retirement. Then here's the one that is probably going to surprise you. Picture a V. And so on the top of the left V, that's you at age 50. And as you get closer to retirement age, which is the bottom of the V, you are de-risking all the way down. You retire, which is the bottom of the V, and then gradually over your retirement years, you begin adding risk to your portfolio.
I have to really say this, Jim. This sounds the opposite of what a lot of advisors for retirement say people should do. I mean, the standard line is that they tell you the percentage of safe investments should equal your age. And so if you're 60 years old, it should be 60%, 70 years, 70%. What you're saying is the opposite. In other words, you de-risk all the way down to retirement, but then back into risk as you go through your retirement years. It's a bounce, so to speak.
And the reason you do that is you want to start out retirement with a portfolio that you know you can count on. So if your goal was to save $1 million, you retire at age 65, 66, you know the $1 million there. You don't want to retire based on $1 million. We go through a bear market and you lose 40% of it. And then you start your retirement with 600,000. That's not the position you want to be. But let's assume that you de-risk and you have that $1 million. I'm just using this for easy figures to visualize. Then gradually, over your retirement years, you add more to risk. And the reason you want that is, like, for example, adding a larger exposure to stocks or blue chip dividend paying stocks is you got to cover inflation. You've got to cover increasing medical costs. You've got to cover just the cost of living that's going to go up every year. And especially in your latter years, once you get into late 70s and 80s and maybe even your 90s, where you could be facing long-term care. So this is why it's important. And what you're really trying to do here, and we talk about this, but it really needs to be hammered home. You want to avoid sequence risk or going through a major drawdown of your assets as you begin retirement. Imagine if you lost 30 to 40% of your assets when you begin your retirement, it would leave you with, quite honestly, few good choices. One, it's going to reduce your lifestyle. So the lifestyle you envision in retirement is going to change when you've lost 40% of your assets. Number two, you may have to go back to work or maybe get a part-time job because you're going to have to make up the 30 and 40% of the assets you lost because you don't want to be drawing down your assets at a, let's say, a 4% percentage. If your goal was a $1 million portfolio, you were going to take out 4% a year. That's 40,000. Do you really want to take 6 or 8% of 600,000 if your portfolio loses 40%? So you're taking out, you're going to draw down those assets. And quite honestly, this is how a lot of people get broke.
Let's deal with tradition again. Traditionally, the industry has recommended a 60-40 split, stocks versus bonds. What's wrong with this approach?
It was a good approach for diversification and for most people heading into retirement. It worked, John, for about 20 years because stocks and bonds were negatively correlated. So if the stock market was going through a downturn, the bond market was actually appreciating and holding its own as it became a safe haven. In other words, they were negatively correlated. When bonds went up, stocks were going down. And when bonds were going down, stocks were going up. So there was this negative correlation that they had between the two. And actually, that correlation works much better if you have a laddered bond approach. In other words, individual bonds versus bond funds, because think of the people that went into bonds in the last two decades. What happened? Interest rates went down till they hit their nadir. In the summer of 2016, when the 10-year Treasury note got down to an interest rate of 1.4%. So if you, let's say, were 40, 60% in bonds in the year 2000, or let's say in the year 2010, what did you see through the last two decades? You saw the dividends on your bond funds reduced as interest rates came down. And the other thing that was happening during this period, which was really important, it was a period of steadily falling interest rates. And we were in that from 1981 to the summer of 2016. So interest rates fell in every single decade. They fell in the 80s. They were double digits as we ended the 80s. But then after the 91 recession, when Greenspan lowered rates, we left the double digit era of interest rates. They came down in the 90s. They came down in the last decade, and they came down in this decade as the Fed initiated quantitative easing. So between, let's say, 1982 and 2017, that 60-40 split earned you a rate of return of 10%. Unfortunately, the tailwinds behind those returns are unlikely to be present over the next decade. Interest rates, as I mentioned, bottomed in the summer of 2016. And if you look at where stock market valuations are today, they're the second highest in history. In fact, if this bull market makes it into next year, it'll be the longest running bull market in history. And we know everything has its own time. Eventually, bull markets turn into bear markets. Eventually, a booming economy turns into a recession. And the other thing that's really important to grasp as we go forward, and this is why, John, I don't think that 60-40 split's going to work. The macro environment has changed considerably. We're in a Fed rate raising cycle right now. We're seeing inflation begin to rise. We're working our way back to trillion-dollar deficits, and we're not even in a recession yet. And that is impacting both stocks, but also the bond market as well. And the best example I can give you why this may not work in the future is if you go back to this year, the correction that began at the end of January and ended on February 8th, the S&P 500 lost 12% in a period of 6 days. Now, throughout this cycle, we talked about the risk on and the risk off trade. When things got risky, like, for example, in a correction or the markets became uncertain, there was this risk off trade. Treasuries would rally, consumer staples, utilities. It did not work this time. Bonds and bond yields remained stubbornly high, and the bonds were not the safe haven they were thought to be. So if you shifted over to bonds, you didn't protect yourself during that downturn that we saw between the last part of January and February.
Since this was different, Jim, what caused that?
If you take a look at, we've gone through almost three decades, a little over three decades of falling interest rates. We got down to a point, John, where interest rates in the summer of 2016 were 1.4% on 10-year Treasury notes. And throughout Europe, almost a third of all sovereign debt was negative. In other words, if you invested in a sovereign bond in Europe or Japan, you paid the government to loan them money. In fact, if you look at Europe today, short-term notes like two-year notes in Italy, Spain, Portugal, they're still negative. And so with rates this low, here's the thing you need to understand. If interest rates are at 1.6 or 2%, a 1% rise in interest rates causes a 6% loss in the value of bonds because we're starting from a much lower level at today's yields. I mean, if you lose 6% when interest rates are 3%, it's going to take you 2 years of income just to make up for the loss.
You know, in today's low yield environment, too, it really does seem that many investors are not aware of the risk because, as you mentioned many times, we've hit historic lows in history, and it really doesn't seem that bonds can go much lower. We're not going to go to zero. So the risk here is not just in the stock market, but also in the bond market.
Well, you know, it is, because the pace of rising rates may be the big, what I call, known unknown. Right now, you know, we don't know how high interest rates are going to go. You know, many, including myself, think that we're in a rising bond cycle. And, you know, last time we were in that, John, was 50 years ago when we were coming, you know, the Fed kept interest rates artificially low during World War II and the Great Depression. And then by the time we got to the late 60s, it was a period of rising inflation. We had the Great Society program, the Vietnam War. We were running deficits. The Fed was printing money and rates began to rise until they reached their summit in the summer of 1981. I mean, think about it. We went from 2% interest rates on treasuries all the way up to almost 16%. And so that's why in a rising interest rate environment, you've really got to be careful, and bonds may not be the cushion in terms of what you think is going to save you or, let's say, diversify your risk.
Now, what if you introduce some diversification into that formula like international stocks and bonds?
Well, I mean, the risk could be even greater, and that's the irony of this. I mean, yields, John, are actually lower in Europe and Japan than they are here. I mean, there is a big spread between what the Treasury is paying, because the Fed was the first one of the central banks to start this rate-raising cycle, followed by England, Canada, and elsewhere. And so, in fact, if we look at the Great Recession in 2008, even though we lost money here, and you lost money in corporate bonds, you lost even more money if you were in emerging markets and overseas. So, you know, what we've seen in the last two bear markets is that asset classes are closely correlated in a downturn. It wasn't just the fact that U.S. stocks fell, European stocks fell, Japanese stocks fell, emerging markets fell, corporate bonds fell. But the only thing that held up was cash in short-term treasuries in the last downturn.
So we do have this question then, what investors should be doing if we're facing the likelihood of another recession with its bear market, given this Fed rate raising process we're going through right now, that raises the probability of another recession in the next 18 to 24 months.
You know, there's a number of things that you can do. First is look at your age and when you plan on retire. If you're age 50, 55, you plan on retiring at age 65, 66, you really need to look at your portfolio given the fact that you may be 5 or 10 years away from retiring. The closer you are to your retirement, the lower risk you should have in your 401k and pension assets. Secondly, know what you own in your pension plan and the market risk of the funds you're invested in. How did those funds do in the downturn between 2000 and 2002, if they were around, or even better, 2007 and 2009? Number three, look at safe investment alternatives that you have available to you in your 401k. Things like a treasury money market fund, maybe a fixed account. And if you are in bonds, make sure you're short-term bond funds, because the longer the maturity in the bond fund, the greater it is subject to interest rate risk. And if you are going to hold some stocks, make sure you're in the blue chip funds. And number four, the point is to de-risk your portfolio, not just because we may head into, let's say, another recession or bear market, but because how close and near you are to retirement, because nobody knows when we're going to reach a market top. Anybody tells you that, hey, this is the market top or this is the market bottom, I have known very few people in my career, and we interview some of the top technicians in the world, that can time it perfectly. So you don't know, and you don't want to get caught up in the next storm and caught off guard, is, you know, for example, the surprise that we saw in January this year when everything was going up for almost a year and a half. It seemed, you know, we didn't even get a 2% correction. And then wham, in 6 days, the market was down 12%.
Okay, so how then do you handle, say, for example, 401k risk for your clients?
We have something that's a very sophisticated risk assessment tool, and it's one of the things that we try to use with our clients, because we have found a discrepancy between, let's say, what a client tells you is their ability to handle risk, and then you look at what they're invested in, and there's a discrepancy between the two. So we put them through a risk assessment program to assess their risk tolerance. Secondly, this program goes in and actually analyzes their fund holdings and their 401ks based on track record, risk holdings, whether it's duration risk in a bond fund, quality in a bond fund, volatility, beta. And then finally, we look at what their investment options are, looking at where they can de-risk and what options are available. And the other thing I think we have to bring into bear is what the client tells us when they plan to retire. You know, if they're obviously in their 40s, it's going to be much different if somebody's in their 50s, mid-50s, or let's say early 60s. So we also want to take a look at the risk that they have given their age and how close they are to actually retiring.
You know, you talk about this risk study. Now, I'm curious about this. If zero is super risky, 10 is, pretty well solidified in. What do you find most of these people come in at anyway? I'm just curious.
You know, usually we find most people, especially, you know, when they're in their 50s and maybe 60s, come in at maybe 3 to 4. And then what we see is their portfolio is 7 to 8. Market risk is 8. And so, you know, they usually will see something like 7 to 8, which is almost twice as risky is what the client tells us their ability to bear. And that's usually what you see towards the end of a bull market. People tend to be more complacent, more comfortable with risk. They don't think there's a cloud on the horizon. And then all of a sudden you got a hiccup like we did in January, and all of a sudden it gets people's attention. Second, we also, you know, take a look at where we are in the business cycle, because you want to be de-risking anyway the closer you get towards the end of a business cycle, and especially when you're starting a Fed rate raising cycle, because just about every recession is preceded by a Fed rate raising cycle. Another way of saying it is every bear market has been caused by Fed rate hikes, but one. And it's not just that you de-risk your portfolio, but you also wanted to monitor the risk and conditions and change as the business cycle changes and as things in your personal life change. Maybe you've had some events that require you to get more conservative, have required you to use cash. Maybe you got laid off, as many people did in the last downturn. Family changes. There's a number of reasons why you want to monitor your portfolio. And it's just something that you don't want to wait until something happens. You know, all of a sudden you get laid off, the company's getting bought out, or you find yourself in the middle of a bear market. The last thing you want to do is find yourself in that condition.
All right. Well, I'm guessing the conclusions we could draw out of this are, number one, you have to recognize the 60-40 rule may not work anymore. That's the first thing. The second thing is, as you get into your 40s and 50s, you need to begin the de-risking process, and then you need to monitor what's going on, and especially de-risk even further in an aging business cycle. Did I miss anything else?
You know, the most important thing is to recognize your age, when you plan on retire. If you are in that risk zone, age 50, 10 to 15 years before retirement, you need to start thinking differently about your pension assets and the 401k plan. Because a lot of people, John, you know, you start a job, they set you up in a 401k plan, you pick your allocation. We found a lot of people have never changed their allocation. It's almost the same the day they started work. And so you really want to do that. So, you know, you don't find yourself, as many people did in 2008 and 2009, when the market lost almost 60%, and they panic. And you don't want to begin your retirement years with a 40% loss, because it'll change your retirement for the rest of your life.
Coming up tomorrow on the program, Jim's guest is going to be Todd Schneider, tax law changes, the new tax law, and estate planning, and how the changes in tax law affect planning for retirement. Okay, time for our real life case study on the program. And you have to remember, all of these are hypothetical illustrations based on real life examples. Any names and circumstances involved have been changed. And we do have slides online at financialsense.com, which illustrate the points that Jim is making.
This week's case is Richard and Gina Blanchard. Both are age 61. They want to retire at age 66. And life expectancy is age 90 and 92. They're moderately conservative. Their investment objective is growth with capital preservation. So they know with longevity on both sides of the family, they're going to need to provide for inflation. And so they wanted some growth in the portfolio. Now, just to give you a little background, Richard is an engineer. He worked as a senior engineer for a large technology company. Working in the tech field for several decades, Richard made the majority of their financial decisions, and he's primarily invested in tech stocks. That's what he knows, being an engineer and working in technology. And he loves investing in technology stocks for the growth potential. I mean, if you think of the 90s during the tech revolution, and even think in this bull market, especially in the last couple of years, the leading sector in the market has been the technology sector. He's hoping to retire in the next couple of years. He's willing to work a little bit longer, especially that Gina can save more for her retirement. And then also they can get their full Social Security benefits. Gina is a nurse practitioner. She's hoping to retire as soon as possible, being that she worked a long career as a nurse practitioner for almost 20 years. She's very conservative after having to experience losing almost $1 million in the last recession. Gina's main concern is being able to retire and, like anybody else, maintain that lifestyle. And this is why they were a little bit concerned, especially now that the Fed was raising interest rates. You know, everybody knows when the Fed raises interest rates, sooner or later, something bad is going to happen in the economy. And they usually, unfortunately, keep doing it until something breaks. So they wanted to have a little bit more conservative portfolio, which was going to be a little tough because they were primarily invested in equities. So we put them through our risk program, and on a scale of 1 to 10, they came in at a 4. Their portfolio was around 7, which is just about where the market is. What was important to them was protecting their nest egg, since they wanted to retire in the next couple of years, managing risk, and maintaining that lifestyle. If we look at their budget, it was roughly about $130,000. Now, if you're in the Midwest listening to this program, you think, wow, that's a lot of money. In California, it really isn't a lot of money. Richard's salary was $150,000 plus bonus and options. Gina's salary was $75,000. So they roughly had almost a surplus of $95,000 a year. They really didn't want to change their lifestyle much in terms of when they retire. So the budget was going to remain roughly about the same at around $130,000. Their Social Security benefits would be $37,000. And Gina's pension would be $40,000, which would leave them roughly about $50,000 in what I call shortfall. Their assets, basically, they had a great net worth. Their home was virtually almost paid for. It was worth about $750,000. They owed a little over $200,000 on that. Richard's retirement at the company was about $2 million. Gina's retirement was only $50,000. The place that she worked at just recently, over the last couple of years, added a pension plan. Otherwise, it would probably have been larger. They had a little over $115,000 in taxable accounts. So their total assets were close to $3 million. Their investment assets were about $2 million. Now, what they wanted to do is they wanted to, remember, their number one goal is they didn't want to change their lifestyle. They wanted to maintain the same lifestyle, but they also wanted to make sure that they could maintain that lifestyle throughout their retirement. But they were also concerned about not losing anything if we were to go into another downturn. So I guess Gina, more so than Rich, was more concerned about protecting assets. What we did is we took and put basically the bulk of the assets in a little close to over 60% laddered bond portfolio with interest rate floaters. Because of a rising interest rate environment, we had about 40% in blue chip dividend paying stocks, and we may even reduce that more as this business cycle goes forward and we possibly head into a recession. But basically, we were making a major shift in terms of where they were invested from where they had been in the past, because being this close to retirement, you know, basically they didn't want to go through another downturn, especially when they lost so much in the last downturn. By doing that, they would end up having an income of almost $150,000 a year and a surplus of close to 20. And the thing about it, the good news is, because interest rates are rising, especially in interest rate floaters, as we de-risk the portfolio, we are able to maintain the same level of income because interest rates are rising. So they weren't going to have to, let's say, scrimp if we went into another bear market.
And again, on the program tomorrow, Todd Schneider is Jim's guest, tax law changes and estate planning. This is important because these have been major changes in tax laws, and they will affect your retirement planning. Anything coming up that you're looking forward to in the near future? Say, you know, maybe, I won't say that. I was going to say maybe a major depression.
No, nothing on their net. But, you know, we are going to take a look at, and please listen to the interview tomorrow with Todd, because this tax law change impacts estate planning and the type of estate plans that many people have. In the future, I am going to do a program on estate taxes at the state level. People will be surprised. There are 20 states in this country that have either estate or inheritance tax, and there are two states in this country that have both estate taxes and inheritance taxes. And many people, this is the gotcha that kind of surprises the heirs when not the federal government, but their own state comes in and takes a big chunk, anywhere from 16 to 20% of the assets away from the heirs. So I want to cover that in the future. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertised with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.